Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I just remind conservative commentators that for years what we've heard is the biggest problem on the bench was judicial activism or a lack of judicial restraint, that an unelected group of people would somehow overturn a duly constituted and passed law. There's a good example.
That's so we're off and running at the Savage Nation. Obama yesterday, of course, intimidated the Supreme Court, implying that if they overturn CastroCare, he will do something to overturn their overturn. Now, the fact of the matter is the Supreme Court has been overturning laws for quite a while. Since 1803, as a matter of fact, the Supreme Court has asserted the power to strike down laws they interpret as unconstitutional. Well, the war is on now because Obama's laid down the gauntlet. A federal appeals court today called the president's bluff and ordered the so-called Justice Department to answer by this Thursday whether the Obama administration believes that the courts have the right to strike down a federal law, according to a lawyer who was in the courtroom. It's an amazing story. You've got to see what's going on because nobody can believe that this man dared say what he said yesterday. It's interesting to me that today I turn on the television and the cable channels are covered with tornadoes. I change from one to the other. Tornado, tornado, tornado. Snow job, snow job, snow job. Today I learned that the Associated Press is a wholly owned subsidiary of the Obama administration. We have a soundbite of the chairman of the Associated Press licking the boots of Obama. It's unheard of. It's unprecedented since the ex-Soviet Union. We have another soundbite of Obama standing next to Mexico President Calderon. Well, you got to hear the Calderon soundbite where he implies that medical care in Mexico is superior. Listen to clip eight. Listen to this.
Of the 12 million Mexicans, 106 million will have efficient, effective, universal health care coverage. So I would say that that I would hope that one of the greatest economies in the world, such as the United States, could follow our example in achieving this because it was a great thing.
How many of you out there would like to see Mexican health care to America and follow the example of Mexico? See, I would say that if the Mexico health care system is so good that our Congress should use Mexican doctors in Mexico as opposed to the American doctors at Bethesda, Maryland. I would think that since we need to follow the example now of Mexico, according to Calderon, a good friend of Obama, that we should start with Schumer going to Mexico the next time he has an ulcer or some kind of pain in his gut. Go down to Mexico City and get the kind of health care that you're telling us we should accept here. So I turn on the TV and there's nothing there. He calls the Supreme Court a group of unelected people. The Supreme Court has a lot to fear, by the way, I think. This is very ominous. What did you see today when you went to the bookstore to buy Trickle Down Tyranny? Have you been there yet? How was my book displayed? Was it up front or hidden in the back next to books of how to remove mustaches from females? How were you treated by the clerk who helped you with the book? Was the clerk helpful or were they surly with green hair and a tongue piercing and Obama bumper sticker on their forehead? Who else did you see buying Trickle Down Tyranny? Did you buy the book for yourself? Were you buying it for yourself or as a gift for someone? And finally, this is a real big question for me. Were you able to buy the book today or was it sold out? if you bought it, was it sold out or hidden? It's a very important question because I have no other shows other than mine, Laura Ingraham, and a few other shows of friendly types. The mainstream media, which includes all of Fox News, make no mistake about it, O'Reilly is equivalent to Piers Morgan. Hannity is the equivalent of Wolf Blitzer. They pretend to be on the other side, but they're bookends. Don't you understand yet what's going on? They're bookends of the established press. Well, okay, that's one man's opinion. Let's go to Wisconsin. Eric, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Hello, Dr. Savage. I picked up your book today at Barnes & Noble in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Thank you.
And I was hoping to see it in the big stand right when you walk in, and I looked around and I couldn't find it. And I went to the new releases table. Still had a hard time finding it. It was kind of tucked away in a corner by Mark.
All right, that's a violation of publishing policy. It's a violation of Barnes & Noble's own internal policies. It's a violation of the agreement with the publisher, HarperCollins. And so that clerk or that manager should be fired. I'm going to make certain that we report this to my publisher and that manager gets fired for hiding the book. And by the way, anyone else who went into a B&N or any other major store and the book was buried, that manager is going to hear from the owner of the chain or the CEO of the chain because upfront placement was guaranteed. You hear me? It's that simple. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number, as usual. There's a very important article today, which you can see on the Drudge Report. It's been up all day. My good friend Art Moore at WorldNet Daily wrote it, and I was happy to see that it made it to the Drudge Report, the most important site in the world. As you well know, everyone reads it except Rick Santorum. And on the top right of the article of the Drudge Report, it says, Michael Savage says, do or die for America. It's a very important article, and it's a very important placement of an article because it's not just hype. Shall I read you a piece of it? Then the rest you can read yourself on the Drudge Report. New York Times bestselling author Michael Savage's 27th book, which he considers his most seminal, is full of documented reasons why America should not reelect Barack Obama. It's a do-or-die situation, Savage said. You can see the trajectory of Obama's regime thus far. Imagine your worst fears, and you're going to have some or all of it if this man is reelected. Savage's trickle-down tyranny, crushing Obama's dream of the socialist states of America, was released today. Savage explains why he wrote the book in its opening pages. The American people have been kept in the dark about what I'm going to reveal to you in this book. They've been fed an endless stream of lies. He begins with advice to the next president, asserting that the nation needs someone who is the exact opposite of Barack Obama. He recognizes Mitt Romney doesn't fit that bill, but he will vote for him anyway if the former governor becomes the Republican nominee because the alternative is unacceptable. He notes that in swing states, women are moving in Obama's direction, giving him the lead with women. Savage said women are flocking toward Obama because they look at the Republican field and see a nightmare. Romney says nothing. Santorum is nauseating. Gingrich is physically repulsive. So women are saying, you know, I'll stick with him. It's all style anyway. Savage said it's still unclear who Romney is. Romney has no traction with the American people because there's no there. Where is he? Who is he? The Etch-a-Sketch wasn't a bad metaphor. Who is the man? Savage fears a repeat of Senator John McCain's failed 08 presidential campaign. Romney is already following the McCain playbook, which is that Obama is a good man. He just doesn't really quite get it, or he isn't up to the job. He said if Romney wins the nomination, he would vote for him strictly on the issue of national security and taxation. But as far as the essence of what I really believe in, the pride of a nation, Romney's not there, said Savage. Savage had dinner with Romney in 2010 and found him a likable person, but Romney will not go on the Savage Nation radio show. Savage thinks Romney simply doesn't understand America. I believe he's part of the establishment, and the establishment has contempt for the average person. They don't even understand who they are. They sneer at them. They look down upon them, and they follow their advisor's suggestions without even understanding what they're doing. Can anyone say that they know what the Republicans stand for other than defeating the Democrats? Where in America, where is America, the nation, in any of their sloganeering? Supported by nearly 300 pages of footnoted documentation of Obama's radical ideas and actions, Savage makes a bold declaration in Trickle-Down Tyranny. He says, if Barack Obama is elected for another four-year term, he'll be president for life. He'll be the new Hugo Chavez. He just threatened the Supreme Court. How do you know he won't eliminate term limits? He'll do away with the two-term limit and win the 2016 election with 90% of the vote. Savage goes on to warn, we have less than 6 months to make sure this doesn't happen. Ask if he really believes Obama intends to extend his power like Venezuela Chavez, or whether the statement is rhetorical. Savage replied, I don't know. I have no idea. Anything is possible with this gang. And here's a question for all of you listening to the show right now. Whether you're a Democrat or a Republican or an independent, I'm going to ask a question of this audience. Can anyone listening to this show right now honestly admit that they're not afraid of this administration? Can anyone admit to themselves that they feel more free today than they did when this gang took over the country? Are you telling me you don't think that your emails are being monitored? I don't care if you're a liberal. I don't care if you're a progressive. You know that your emails, you know that your phone calls are being monitored by spies inside the government. Is that a country you want to live in? Is that the progress you dreamed of? Huh? In his book, Savage helps make some of Obama's policies clear by documenting the influence of Alinsky, whose Rules for Radicals is used by the left today as a playbook. Savage turns Alinsky around and offers his own rules for beating radicals, which include never negotiate with a leftist Democrat. Savage said at one point he thought about titling the book Rules for Beating Radicals. My book is not just a theoretical platform. It's actually a practical platform for between now and the election, which is why I have everything at stake in writing this book. When I come back, I'll take your calls on trickle-down tyranny. Was the book in stock? Was it hidden? Was it out there? Tell us the name of the store. I'll be right back. Savage.
Things and Romney that folks talk about is the fact that sometimes that your husband, he appears stiff. Do you have to fight back some critics like, my husband isn't stiff, okay?
Well, I guess we better unzip him and let the real Mitt Romney out, because he is not. It is
oh
so funny.
Oh my God,
to me,
unzip him. Now, here's an example of the out of touch check pants Republican Romney station. She avoids the Savage Nation, and she thinks you're going to vote for her husband. It's sickening. This is frightening. This is like a Governor Rockefeller kind of situation. People don't quite know where to place Romney. Romney is almost a reincarnation of Rockefeller, a Rockefeller Republican, which doesn't make him a bad man, but he's certainly not a man who has a real traction with the American people. You understand that? But the real issue is this. Here it is. What do you fear Obama will do if he's reelected? I go through this, what I fear he will do if he's reelected. Are you ready? Think hard about what a second Obama term might look like, when Obama would have the opportunity to help fulfill the left's dreams. What would it be? Well, in the article on the Drudge Report, top right, it's entirely possible, Savage said, that Obama would try to eliminate the Second Amendment and seize citizens' privately owned guns. Is that true or false? It's a given, he said, that he's going to wipe out the Defense of Marriage Act. And it's a given that he will grant amnesty to illegal aliens, which he's done already through Janet Napolitano, who is breaking the law, frankly. She is breaking the law. And if we had a Republican Party, she would be indicted for what she's doing. But we don't have an opposition party. We have Ann Romney going on little tiny shows, making believe that it matters. But now let's take the rest of the shopping list that you fear. How about monitoring the internet? He does it already. How about monitoring your emails through a supercomputer? Obama does it already, under the guise of anti-terrorism. Savage said people are living with their heads over their shoulders, worried that what they write in emails or what they say in public could be misconstrued and result in a knock at the door in the middle of the night. So what are we living in now, Savage asked? A free society or a crypto dictatorship? Savage said he never imagined someone like Obama coming along, but he noted that the Founding Fathers did. The separation of powers built into the Constitution was designed to protect the nation from a dictatorship. Savage pointed to Obama's broad use of executive orders to bypass Congress as a direct assault on the Founders' separation doctrine, and I go into that. I don't want to quote my own article. I know many of you agree with me. And the fact of the matter is, the country has drifted so far to the left right now with the burgeoning welfare state that many of you think it's too late to do anything about it. Many of you fear that the Republicans have the guts to not only beat B.O., but to overturn what B.O. has done to this country during his reign of terror. Did you hear? This is a big, big story here. Borders, language, culture, and a strong dollar, someone said, should be my motto. So, ladies and gentlemen, I'm asking you a question. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Now, many of the leftists are being paid by the Obama administration to go on to this article and smear me. Did you hear? Did you hear this? So they say that I'm being clever here and selling a book, and I'm using misinformation. I will remind you that there are 35 pages of references. Do you think I'm exaggerating when I say these things about the good President Obama? Stuart in New York, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I went to Barnes & Noble. I could not. It was buried.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear. You went to BNN in Manhattan, and what happened?
The book was buried. It took about a half hour to find it.
Well, that's that clerk, that manager, is going to be hearing from the publisher, and they'll probably be fired this week. Because you see, the way the publishing industry works is big publishers pay for upfront placement the day the book is released. If they don't do it, they're violating the contract with the publisher. And if they take it upon themselves to censor a book because they don't like the politics, they have no business in the book business. They ought to be working inside the Justice Department for Eric Holder. Stuart, did you eventually find the book buried underneath something else?
Yes, there was another book that was put on top of a stack of your books to make it seem that your book wasn't there. It was found only when, after about a half hour of looking for it, somebody discovered that someone had written
another
book.
I'm an unknown author. After 27 books, I'm completely unknown. If I was on a wholly owned subsidiary of the Obama administration's channel, they would suddenly understand the authorship. All right, so you got your copy of Trickle Down Tyranny. Now, where's the BNN that this happens, Stuart? What street?
82nd Street and Broadway.
Oh, you're in the heart of the monster. That's the diehard communist left lives up there. They all have second homes in Vermont where they run away to get away from themselves and what they did to Manhattan.
Seven.
The most astonishing soundbite that I heard is not so much him threatening the Supreme Court, although that unto itself was a shocker, to call them a group of unelected people. I've never heard a president say that in my lifetime. I know this occurred in the past. I know that Jackson said to the Supreme Court, now that you have found in force, meaning Jackson said, I own the army, you have nothing. And so Jackson stood up to the Supreme Court in his time and was a fascist in his own way. But since that time, there's never been a president who did this. Or has there been? Well, in fact, there has. Obama's hero, one of his heroes, is Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Some would argue he was our first socialist dictator. Did you know that Roosevelt tried to stack the Supreme Court with additional justices in order to skew the results? You didn't know that. Did you know that during the terror of the Roosevelt regime, there was a case, a classic case, which I pointed out in my last book, of the Schechter brothers. I have to keep pointing it out because if you don't know your history, okay, let's repeat it. Those who do not know their history are condemned to repeat it. Okay, let's start with that one. That's not my statement. That's Santayana, and he wasn't a Latin musician. Santayana, the Spanish philosopher, wrote, "Those who do not know their history are condemned to repeat it." Well, our history is quite clear. FDR tried to impose some of his controls on everyone in America. And he said to some little butchers in Brooklyn, kosher butchers, you can't sell a certain type of chicken in a certain amount. They said, but I have to do that in order to remain a kosher butcher. He said, we're putting you in jail. He actually imprisoned three of these boys, three kosher butchers. When they got out of prison, they got a big lawyer. The big lawyer challenged the president. The president's law was overturned by the United States Supreme Court. And I believe it was Justice Holmes, and I'm not positive. I don't know if it was him. No, it was at Felix Frankfurt of Beowulf. Look it up in TUP. It may have been. I don't know what era that those fellows lived in, but I know exactly the case. The Schechter brother case is a precedent for overturning Obamacare. It has been done before. It's unprecedented for a president to threaten Supreme Court justices. And if we had a free press, this would be the headline. But we don't have a free press. We don't make no mistake about it. We have an own press, a wholly owned subsidiary of the Obama administration. It would be shameful if these individuals had any shame. Now, how do I prove that the press is wholly owned by the Obama administration? Is it just hype? Well, I'll let you decide for yourself. I want you to listen to the stooge, who's the chairman of the Associated Press, Dean Singleton, in clip 9. You have to hear this to believe it.
President Obama made history as the first minority to be elected president. Even many who opposed his election felt proud of our country as he took the oath of office. As president, he inherited the headwinds of the worst economic recession since the Great Depression.
Who
he pushed through Congress the biggest economic recovery plan in history.
Who wrote this for you, you stooge, you?
Of two of the big three auto manufacturers.
You should be ashamed of yourself, you rat, you.
He pursued domestic and foreign policy agendas that were controversial to many, highlighted by his signature into law of the most comprehensive health care legislation in history. And the budget plans proposed by the president...
Okay, you're now listening to a PR agent for Obama, who happens to be the chairman of the Associated Press. This occurred, in my knowledge, this occurred during the ex-Soviet Union's period, when there was a state-owned newspaper called Pravda and Izvestia. Dean Singleton is a Stalinist. Unfortunately, he controls the Associated Press. He is working for the Obama administration. It's shocking. It's sickening to listen to this. I mean, I don't understand how anybody can want to live in a country where there's no free press. And then, to add insult to injury, he has the president of Mexico at his side, where he tells us through a translator that we should follow the example of Mexico with the health care. You got to hear clip 8 again. This is not to be believed. Listen.
Of the 12 million Mexicans, 106 million will have efficient, effective, universal health care coverage. So I would say that that I would hope that one of the greatest economies in the world, such as the United States, could follow our example in achieving this, because it was a great thing.
Could you believe that anybody in the history of this world would listen to this man and take him seriously? We should copy the Mexican universal health care system. They have about the worst medical care in the world. In fact, it's so bad that millions of illegals pour over the border to get free medical care in America. I've been in the emergency room. I see it here. And I would say that if the universal health care coverage in Mexico is so wonderful, that Charles Schumer and all the other Democrats, Harry Reid, the president himself, should go over there and get the medical care that they get in Mexico and then come back in a year and tell us how good it was. Don't use the rotten, stinking American medical system over there at the Bethesda, Maryland. No, use that in Mexico. Go there and get your care in Mexico City, or go to Tijuana. It's a short flight on Air Force One. And then come back and tell us how good it was. I'm outraged by this. I have a whole chapter on Castro care and trickle-down tyranny. You say, well, I've heard it all before. What do I need your book for? Well, all right, so you're a cynic. You don't need anything. You know everything. But no one's ever written a book as good as this. There are lines in here that will live forever. One line is all I'm going to read to you today from this book. Advice to the next president, one line. I want you to name one person in the nonfiction world who's written a political book who's written a better line. See, every writer, I began as a writer, not a talk show host. For years, I was laboring as a writer. And every writer knows that they're seeking one great line. If they're remembered for one great line. I've had titles that are great. But here's the best line I've ever written. It's the opening to my book, Trickle Down Tyranny. You ready for it? Economies can be rebuilt, armies can be repopulated, but once a nation's pride is gone, it can almost never be restored. The loss of a nation's honor is something not even centuries can repair. That's two sentences. Every service member in this country deserves a copy of this book. They should carry it around as a Bible in their chest, because they're putting their lives on their line for what? What are they dying for? If you ask most of the men who enlist in combat divisions of the U.S. military, why they do so, do you think they're doing it because they want to give, they want to introduce a hamburger stand to the Afghanis? Do you think they're doing it because they want the economy improved in Afghanistan? They're doing it because they believe in duty, honor, country. They believe that MacArthur was correct when he instilled in the American military duty, honor, country. Men have risked their lives for this country. And they do it because they have honor. They have a sense of honor. And so if I say that once a nation's pride is gone, it can almost never be restored, the loss of a nation's honor is something not even centuries can repair. Those two sentences are worth it. If I could, I'd give a copy to every service member in the country. I'd give it out of my own pocket. I can't do it. First of all, I'm not allowed to buy books for the military. Secondly, it's impossible to distribute the books. But you can do it. You know, there used to be a phrase. My father had a little store in New York on Ludlow Street where there was a deli up the street called Katz's. I think it's still there. His store is long gone. He labored in that little antique store, and I think it's now a nightclub of some kind. I'm sure he'd probably enjoy it if he looked at it compared to what he suffered in that store. But there was a deli up the street, a big deli called Katz's Deli. And I remember when I was a little boy, it was post-World War II, but they still had signs on the wall from World War II. And one of them, painted on the side of the wall, it said, "Send a salami to your boy in the army." I used to read that and laugh about it. I couldn't understand the mechanics of that. As a little kid, you know, kids read things and they wonder, how do you do that? How do you send a salami to your boy in the army? I used to ponder it for days sometimes. On those long rides in from Queens over the Golden Gate Bridge, over the Williamsburg Bridge. I'm mixing up my bridges and my cities now. On those long rides in that old DeSoto over the Williamsburg Bridge, I'd wonder about a lot of things. I'd see the big ships coming into the Brooklyn Navy Yard, long gone. It's been turned into a nightclub, I think, the Brooklyn Navy Yard, or a film studio. I'd see sugar ships down at the Domino Pier, and I would imagine where those ships went to get the sugar. They were still offloading with cranes. I remember they had longshoremen, and they had cranes, and they lift the bales of sugar. I'd watch it as the car went over that bridge, and I'd hear the vibration on the tires. I'd hear it, and I'd look down, and I imagine the ports that those ships came from, and I'd imagine one day I'd go to those exotic ports, and I have done so. And, of course, now I'm back from those exotic ports. But on the side of the deli at that time was send a salami to your boy in the army. I could not understand the logistics of sending millions of salamis around the world. There was something obscene about it on top of it all. But I'll let that part of it go. But how about sending trickle-up poverty to your boy in the army? Do you think that would be something worth doing? I do. I'd recommend it. Maybe it'll re-incite their love for this country because we don't hear it from Romney. I'm sorry to tell you, I don't hear anything coming out of Romney that even approximates a respect and love for America. He's a technocrat. He's a bureaucrat. He's a businessman. He may as well be working for one corporation or another. And he says, well, when I take over the corporation, we're going to fix the economy of the corporation. Where is he talking about the heart and soul of America? That's what I want in a candidate. Somebody who loves America. Somebody who takes pride in America. Somebody who does not bash America. Somebody who does not try to destroy every institution in the country and call himself a revolutionary of some kind. That's what I want to hear coming out of Romney. But I don't hear it. Now let's take your calls on the Savage Nation. New York, WOR. Anthony, go ahead, please.
Yeah, Dr. Savage, I can't wait to read your book, but I did have a hard time finding the book today at my local Target store. They didn't have the book anywhere on the shelf. I asked them to go and see if they have it out there.
Anthony,
back.
Where did you go? Which Target in New York?
It's in Brooklyn.
A Target in Brooklyn?
Yeah, Target store in Brooklyn. And they went, she must have searched for about 30 minutes. Came back out, said, sorry, we never heard of such book. We don't have it. And
Did you find a stack of salamis where my book should be?
Yeah.
send the salami to your boy in the army. All right, I'm going to send you a free copy of Trickle Down Tyranny, Anthony, and the publisher will get down, figure that one out. I have no answer to these questions. If the books are missing in your bookstore, we want to hear from you today and every day this week. It's that simple. Let's go across the country. Now let's go south into tornado country. Curtis in Texas, you're on the Savage Nation. What was your experience today in a bookstore?
Hey, sir. I just got out of Barnes & Noble's down here in Harker Heights. You know, these three towns surround Fort Hood. So I would say probably 70% are all military. Your book was to the left of the door, and it was kind of on its own little island. Everything was separated from it from a good little bit. And it was really easy to find right there. I mean, it had no problems. Nobody gave me the stink eye or when I picked it up or anything.
Yeah, but you're in a conservative district of Texas, so that's good news. At least they didn't have an infiltrator get in there and bury the book underneath the counting or something.
Right. I'm headed down to Temple right now to pick up another copy. I heard you talking about giving it to the military, and I work in direct support with the military, the general here on Fort Hood. So I'm going to go ahead and pick up a couple copies. And
hey, you're at Fort Hood, Curtis. Does anyone mutter about why Major Nidal Hassan, the perpetrator of the Fort Hood massacre, has not yet been brought to trial? Do people on that military base want him brought to trial?
Well, yeah, everybody wants him brought to trial. Everybody wants to get a good sense of what happened and what's going on, because the Article 32 hearing that we had here on Fort Hood for him left a lot of questions unanswered, and everybody's really concerned with the trial. And once people get sworn in and they're put on the stand, the truth is going to come out. The real things are going to come out.
I think that the Fort Hood massacre is being swept under the rug by Obama and the U.S. Army itself. And the reason is because the head of the Army at that time, he had reports, by everything I have read, this Nidal Hassan was signing his reports a la Akbar for several years. Every medical report was signed with a statement such as that. He should have been thrown out. He was a ticking time bomb. You know and I know, what if there was a fundamentalist Christian doctor who signed every medical report with Jesus be praised? Tell me what would have happened to him the first time he did that. He would have been thrown off. He would have had his pension seized, if not thrown in the brig. But because Nidal Hassan was a Muslim, they looked the other way. There's a chain of command in the Army, and they're all guilty of this crime. That is why this man has not yet brought to trial. I'm sending you a free copy of Trickle Down Tyranny to give to a boy in the Army along with a salami. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I didn't know Jerry Lewis sang "Send the Salami to Your Boy in the Army," but apparently that's what they did in World War II. I would say send a copy of Trickle Down Tyranny to your boy in the Army. Now, speaking of aides to the last socialist president, FDR, and I told you about the case of the kosher butchers he put in jail because they wouldn't comply with his centralization plans for the distribution of certain items. Put him in jail. They came out in jail. They sued, and they won. The Supreme Court overturned the dictatorship of Roosevelt, and it was Justice Louis Brandeis who said this. He said, "This is the end of this business of centralization, and I want you to go back and tell the president that we're not going to let this government centralize everything." See, that's when that's what he said. One line. "This is the end of this business of centralization, and I want you to go back and tell the president that we're not going to let this government centralize everything." What's very ironic here to me is that Brandeis is known as a great liberal justice. Brandeis University is one of the most left-wing universities in the country. And yet many of the dumb professors there don't even realize that Louis Brandeis himself, for whom the university is named, would be considered a right-wing conservative today by comparison, which tells you that the leftists today are not liberals. They're not progressives. They're crypto-communists, most of them. They may not even understand it themselves. But the bottom line here is that, yes, the Supreme Court has overturned presidents before Mr. Obama. And you're not better than FDR, are you? Well, we'll find out soon. There was the other case of Andrew Jackson, dispute with Georgia. Georgia did not want to deport the Cherokee Indians and throw them out of the state of Georgia where they came from and deport them to the Badlands in the Indian Removal Act of 1830, where they took land from the Indians and gave them lands west of the Mississippi. The tribal leadership did not accept that. The Cherokee people didn't accept that. So Georgia, the state of Georgia, moved to extend state laws over the Cherokee lands in 1830, and the matter went to the U.S. Supreme Court. In the Cherokee Nation versus Georgia, 1831, the Marshall Court ruled that the Cherokee Nation was not a sovereign and independent nation and therefore refused to hear the case. But then there was another one. In Worcester versus Georgia, 1832, the court ruled that Georgia could not impose laws in Cherokee territory since only the national government, not state governments, had authority in Indian affairs. Now, here's the point. President Andrew Jackson used the dispute with Georgia to put pressure on the Cherokees to sign a forced removal treaty. And here's what President Andrew Jackson said. He said, John Marshall has made his decision. Now let him enforce it. Build a fire under them. When it gets hot enough, they'll go. That was President Andrew Jackson, perhaps one of the mentors of President Obama. Another irony here is that Jackson is considered a great liberal. Isn't that interesting? I want to ask the audience a homework question because I don't think you can do it now. The book is too new. Sometime tomorrow or this week, would you call this show The Savage Nation and give me some other lines that you think are quotable and that will live in time? Okay? There's so many things I can do all in 1 second. I can't do them in 1 second. Let's go to the callers in Sacramento. We hear the book is hidden. Kirk in Sacramento. Ann. No, let's go to Ann. Ann, Sacramento, California. Go ahead. Fire away. Well, what happened? Tell us what happened.
Well, I went to Barnes & Noble at Tan Foran Shopping Center in San Bruno, and your book was still on the pallet, and that was afternoon. And so they went downstairs and got me one, so I was the first book off the pallet. So,
well, in San Francisco, I'm surprised they didn't hold a bonfire and burn the book. You know, I mean, it's surprising that the Barnes & Noble employees didn't go on strike and say we refuse to sell the book.
Looking forward to reading it. And while I
thank you for the report. Anyone else out there have a bookstore horror story? I want to hear it. If you have any other lines from my book that you think are quotable, I want to hear from it. I'm going to cover all the news of the day intermittently because there is news of the day, believe it or not. And it's not all about Obama. Unfortunately, most of it's about Obama. Okay? I mean, it's as simple as that. Most of it's about the president. He's the most, let us say, reactionary president in American history. Isn't that interesting? He's a reactionary? Cows in Berkeley? Impossible. Yes, he's a reactionary.
Savvy.
Warning. The Michael Savvy Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Is the Savage Nation. It was written, if I am not for myself, who will be? If I'm only for myself, who am I? That was written in the year 1100 and something or other by a famous Jewish philosopher. I think it was the Rambam who wrote it. If I am not for myself, who will be? If I'm only for myself, who am I? It's a pretty good adage to follow in your life, meaning look out for number one, but not exclusively for number one. Because if you look out exclusively for number one, what do you become? Jesus said it another way. What does it profit a man if he gaineth the world and loses his soul? That's what that adage means. So these things have been said in many different ways. So you'll have to forgive me if I talk about my book, Trickle Down Tyranny, since no one else is talking about it. And I'm asking you, what did you have happen to you today when you went to the bookstore to buy Trickle Down Tyranny? Given the fact that I'm blacklisted on Fox News, you'd expect this on every other channel. We know that they're in the pocket of Obama. But you'd expect that Murdoch and Roger Ailes would want to distribute the ideas of a man as brilliant as I. They have the worst vermin on the planet on that channel, left and right, day and night. If it burns, it earns. If it bleeds, it leads. Prostitutes, pimps, murderers, you name it. And yet they ban me as though I am something worse than a pimp. I am something worse than a murderer. What does that say to you about Murdoch's outlet? So forgive me then for talking about my book, because this is what I do once a year or so, or twice a year now, to remind my audience that I exist, and I exist through them, and I exist through my radio stations, and I want to thank every radio affiliate in the country who carries this show for carrying the show. You have a lot of guts to do so, especially with the pressure on you right now to fold and carry, let us say, what the Associated Press wants you to carry, which would be nothing but Izvesti or Pravda. The best article out there now is by World Net Daily called Do or Die for America. It's on the top of the Drudge Report with some other great stories. But I'm asking you, was the book displayed properly? Were you treated well? Were you sneered at? New York, WOR. Dan, what was your experience today in the bookstores and where?
Well, I was just going to say real quick, if you don't look out for number one, you run the risk of becoming number two.
You're not kidding. Well, I'm number three in radio, so I'm already number three. It doesn't bother me. It's better than being zero.
That's right. That's right. Well, I went to my university bookstore today, which is a part of is a Barnes & Noble chain, and I asked an elderly clerk if, in a louder than normal voice, if they had Trickle-Down Tyranny. And I also mentioned the subtitle at a pretty audible rate just to see if I got any expressions. She went to look for it on the computer, said they didn't order any. Then she ran over to the shelves where she had a stack of your old books. She said she loves you. She got my number and said as soon as they get them in, she's going to special order it for me, that I'll get a call from them.
So in other words, the chain store owner didn't want to carry it in an election year because it could tilt the election in favor of an actual American candidate. I understand that. I'm sending you a free copy of Trickle-Down Tyranny. Stay on the line. Okay, look, we're fighting a battle here. Sacramento. Kirk, your experience today and where? Go ahead, please.
Yes, Michael, right in your backyard. Fairfield, California, Barnes and Noble bookstore there in the Gateway Shopping Center. I walked in, asked for your book because I didn't see it. Spent about 30 minutes looking for it. Went over to the counter, asked for it. But the gal says, oh, I never heard of that author. I says, you better know you're going to hear more from me.
Well, that shows you her educational level. After 27 books, she never heard of me. So what has she heard of?
Al Gorleone's book, right?
Yeah, Al Gorleone, how to rape a country with a fake Solyndra loan.
Absolutely, absolutely.
All right, well, that's what you're going to get. You're going to get the good, the bad, and the ugly. I'm sending you a free copy of something. If you can name it, you gain it. What is it?
Trickle-Up Tyranny.
No. No, I'm sorry, you're wrong. We'll give you one more chance. If you name it, you gain it. What's the name of it? Oh, God, he hung up. Okay, look, we're going to play a bell like that if you don't get the name right. If you do guess it right, tell them what they get. Go ahead, play it. See, that means you win the book. We're going to condition you to a win and a loss. All right, look, what would you like me to do for you today? I'll do some news. I mean, I'm trying to do the news. This morning I was on my friend Laura Ingraham's show. I did an incredible. She and I have great chemistry, Laura and I. Did any of you hear the Laura Ingraham show this morning? We have a really magical persona together on the radio, but I'm going to play a piece of that interview for a little later because a woman's voice is always better than a man's voice by itself. It is. It sounds nice, a man and a woman together. It's like George Burns and Gracie with the George Burns and Gracie Allen of the conservative movement. except I don't smoke cigars. Don't smoke. Oh! If you go to my website, michaelsavage.com, you'll see a picture of my birthday party, a series of pictures. I put a few up. They were taken by the famous photographer, Leon Borenstein, who did my book covers for years now. And the lead picture is that of Teddy. He looks like a little lion. He is so beautiful. I love my dog. Hi, Teddy. He's with me in the studio every day. You hear him shaking in the background, except when he goes for grooming. Look at Dr. Savage's celebration if you're bored of everything else, if you don't care whether America lives or dies. Take a look at that dog. The next picture of the party is the dog. The third picture is of Michael Savage with a cake microphone. Boy, what an ugly outfit I wore. My God, I must have been colorblind. I don't understand what I did there with the red shirt and that weird tie. But all right, what are you going to do? The fourth picture is of a cake radio, the Savage radio. I didn't even know it was a cake. My son made it up for me. God, it was expensive. And the bottom is Dr. Savage's birthday celebration 2012 with a cake microphone. Below that is a picture of the room it was in with a beautiful woman to my left and some people to the right and a cake microphone. Below that is the cake microphone. Tomorrow there'll be more pictures from the party. This is my last party as well. Last book, last party. I'm going through a lot of things with last things. I don't know what I'm going through, but I really feel it. It's like when I left, you don't know about this. I lived in Hawaii myself, the land of Obama's alleged birth. And I lived there from 68 when I went to graduate school. I earned two master's degrees. Then I went to California to get my PhD at Berkeley, which I got in 3 years, which may be a world record. Do you know anybody else who got a PhD in 3 years? I did. Can't take that away from me, or can you?
Oh, a big deal. It's your nutrition. After all, nothing. Nothing. It's not a real serious subject like political science, poli-sci, or studying Alinsky.
So I went to Berkeley, moved from Hawaii. But in Hawaii, when I lived there, I never forget it as long as I lived. I was living there from 68. I went to grad school. I was older already. I went back late in life. And I lived there till 74. And then my son had to enter first grade. And the racism against white kids was so great. And I didn't have the money to send him to the school that Obama went to on a scholarship, Punahou, where the kids with little money went. He had to go to public school. I didn't want him to be beaten up by the local kids who were just really mean, really mean. They were mean to kids like that. So that was one reason I left. But there was another reason, and I'm getting to it. And it's getting back to this thing where I say it's my last book, nonfiction book, and my last party. 1974, I was very active in trying to save the islands from development because they were the islands were being decimated. I'm not against hotels. I'm not against development, but it was ugly development. And they were about to develop Molokai. You may know it under another name, you know, Father Damien, the leper colony's way past it. They wanted to develop a hotel on that island. Here's what happened. I flew there in a one-engine plane. I was going to be flying there. Now I remember to this day. I was supposed to fly there in order to try and, with a group of people, to stop the development of a hotel on the west shore of Molokai, right? I went to the airport that day. As long as I live, I can remember this story. I go to the airport. The plane was there. I looked at the plane. I said, it's futile. They're going to build that hotel. I'm wasting my time. I went home, packed a bag. I got a one-way ticket to San Francisco, and I never looked back. I never went back. I went to visit, but I never, ever lived there again because I saw the handwriting was on the wall. I mean, the islands are still heartbreakingly beautiful. The politics are that of a third-world nation. Hawaii is run by a corrupt machine that makes Chicago look honest. It is about as corrupt as San Francisco. Hawaii, Honolulu. You ask yourself, where's the FBI? You're just unbelievable. I don't know how they get away with the things they get away with in these places. But I never went back. Now I rarely go over the Golden Gate Bridge into San Francisco because the streets are broken. How could a city like this, which is under Democrat rule, if you want to see what one-party rule brings, don't look any further than the state of California under the iron fist of Jerry Brown, who deceived me into thinking he was a centrist. I did give him money 5 years ago. My friend MK told me Jerry Brown had changed from his moonbeam days. And I met Jerry Brown a few times, and I went to one of his speeches at a military academy in Oakland. I thought he was doing great stuff for minority kids. I gave him money. Then I wake up, and he's governor, and the man is the most fanatic leftist he always has been all his life. But if you want to see the devastation that is wrought by left-wing fanatics, don't look any further than the roadways leading up to the Golden Gate Bridge. The roadway leading up to the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco is broken like in a third world dictatorship. In fact, the roads in a third world country are better than they are in the San Francisco area. We have amongst the worst roads in the country. Where does the money go? You tell me where the money goes. Where do the hundreds of millions of dollars in highway funds go? It goes up the nose of the politicians. They put it in their kitty. Where's the money? How do they leave an iconic structure like this, the Golden Gate Bridge, with broken roads going to and from it? How is it possible? How do they get away with it? Answer, liberal Democrats, corruption, the most corrupt one-party system in the world, is not in Argentina right now. Argentina has gone through its tyranny. The most corrupt one-party system in the world is emerging here in the United States of America. That's why I say trickle-down tyranny. All roads lead to trickle-down tyranny. It's do or die. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Well, let me read to you from page 161 of Trickle-Down Tyranny. This is the chapter, Tyranny of the Egghead Wars. You know, this describes a lot of the zaniness that we're seeing coming out of the Obama administration. They're academicians. Academicians don't have a contact with the real world. It's an academic view of the world. That's why some of the things Obama is saying make no sense, where he refers to the Supreme Court justices as a group of unelected people. Who would write a thing like that? It sounds like he stumbled on it in that he didn't even believe somebody put that into his teleprompter or his little speech cards. So I write this. The bigger picture of Obama is that he is becoming a factotum of that of George Soros into a new being, a two-headed monster that I call Sorobama. George Soros' fingerprints are all over Obama's foreign policy. This policy is in the process of completely realigning the power structure in the Middle East, making way for the emergence of a new caliphate, a coalition of Islamist governments determined to destroy Israel. The Sorobama complex has targeted Israel, and the plan is being put in place stage by stage. Obama willfully delayed so I'm not going to read you the whole thing, okay? Like all leftist dictators, Obama is becoming a monster. Obama's greatest dream is to see Jerusalem divided. It would represent justification for his anti-Semitic Nobel Peace Prize bestowed on him by the Jew-hating Norwegians. Trickle-down tyranny doesn't just mean guaranteeing loans to your political cronies at taxpayer expense. It doesn't refer only to Obama's practice of supporting public employee unions in their quest to eliminate the private sector and make every American worker a government employee. It doesn't just mean sending machine guns to Mexico without any arrests. Do you realize that if a cop on the beat planted a weapon in a murder, that cop would go to jail as an accessory to murder? How are the president of the United States and his attorney general any different from a cop who plants a weapon at a crime scene? We're talking about the New World Order of Sorobama, where George Soros is the puppet master and Obama is his puppet. George Soros, the most power-mad man on the planet, a man who has more power than most sovereign nations. Rothschild's quote applies here. Give me control of a nation's money, and I do not care, and I care not who makes its laws. Well, I can go on, but I'm going to let you go on. It's in trickle-down tyranny. So you say, well, God, there's a lot of information here. Do I really want it? I don't know. Do you want it? You want information, or you want to have your head in the sand and just mutter about Obama? Every time I see a Sorobama car go by with their bumper sticker trying to cut me off in the right lane, and it says Obama, Biden, or whatever it might say, I shake my head. I wonder how brainwashed people can be. Do they actually know what this man has done, is doing, and will do? Do they approve of what he has done, is doing, and will do? Or do they not even understand what Obama is doing? Do they not understand it, or do they approve of it? Do they approve of him passing the NDAA in the middle of the night on New Year's Eve while you slept under the guise of fighting terrorism? Do they approve of him rewarding poverty, punishing success, praising our enemies, stiffing our allies? Do they approve of him using the military as a pawn, using the SEALs as a publicity stunt? Do they approve of him creating chaos at our border, granting amnesty, de facto amnesty, to millions of illegal aliens, which is a criminal act unto itself? Do they approve of the corporations and the cronies making off with all of the nation's wealth while the economy flatlines and he rewards his most deep-pocketed campaign donors and allies with fat grants and contracts? Well, I put a lot on the line here. You think I'm an idiot? You think I don't know what danger I'm putting myself in by saying these things? If I actually believe that we have a tyrant in the White House, then why didn't I just quit radio and not write any more books and disappear into the sunset? Ask yourself why I didn't do that. I could have done it. I could have retired 2 years ago, 5 years ago, 3 years ago. I'm not one of those people in radio who were doing it because I have to support young children. I'm way past that point. So why am I doing it? Could you actually believe that there's someone out there who cares about America? Could you actually believe there's someone who fears what this man is liable to do if he is not checked, given what he just said yesterday, that the Supreme Court is nothing but a group of unelected people? Don't you fear him wiping out term limits? Don't you fear him wiping out the Second Amendment? How about the First Amendment? Why should that stand? Maybe he can overrule it.
Set.
Look, I want to talk to you about the most important book I've ever written. I believe it's going to be my last nonfiction book. trickle-down tyranny, crushing Obama's dream of the socialist states of America.
Michael Savage is one of the most listened to radio hosts in the United States. He's a publishing juggernaut. His brand new book out today, and I'm breaking this, Trickle-Down Tyranny, Crushing Obama's Dream of the Socialist States of America. I am delighted he joins me now. And Michael, congratulations on another tour de force. How are you?
Laura, you know, sometimes life imitates. First of all, thank you for having me on your show. Sorry to be so impolite. But I'm on the edge of my seat because sometimes life imitates art. Here yesterday, the president attacks, really threatens the Supreme Court justices with an unprecedented warning. I've never seen anything like this in my lifetime. The man thinks he's king. He calls the Supreme Court justices this group of unelected people, and if they dare to overturn my Castro care, what is he doing? Threatening them, Laura? You're a former Supreme Court clerk, Laura. Have you ever heard of a president threatening a Supreme Court justice? I know it happened in the days of Jackson, who said, now that you've ruled and forced, but it's been quite a while since Jackson, hasn't it?
Yes, and it's the Chicago way. I mean, that's what you do, right? It's the Chicago way.
And what do you mean? You mean he's actually
threatening?
You really think he, Laura, that statement, a group of unelected people, have you heard a president refer to Supremes as that, unelected people, before? What does he mean by that?
Well, look, the only thing that we know now, and you write about this in your book, is that America is in decline. And apparently there is no one in the lamestream media, dinosaur media, whatever we want to call it, there's really no one who is interested in having a serious conversation about how to turn this thing around. Because we're going to talk about his wonderful family and the basketball clinics he's teaching, or Michelle's planting her garden, or she's at the Nickelodeon Awards, or Brangelina's in the White House. We're just not going to have a conversation about what's happening with China, Russia, Brazil, or anything that's happening with terrorism against Christians in the Middle East. We're not talking about it.
They blew up the Middle East. These crazy leftists have blown up the entire Middle East. I predicted that we'd have an Islamist running Egypt. You look at the entire Arab Crescent. It's in chaos. Now, Laura, imagine your worst fears, and you're going to have some or all of it if Obama is reelected. You take your worst fears. You know and I know that there's a risk we'll lose the Second Amendment. You know and I know it's a given he's going to grant amnesty to illegal aliens. You and I both know he'll eliminate the Defense of Marriage Act. Now go down the shopping list of fears that you have about this man, and you will see them come true if the man is reelected. This is not a joke. I think that we're in. Laura, let me put it this way. Many people are skeptical. They figure, okay, Savage is just hyping a new book, Trickle Down Tyranny. Why should I listen to him? Does anyone listening to this show truly feel more safe under Obama than they did before he took office?
No.
Does anyone listening to this show, can they honestly admit that they don't look over their shoulder out of fear that they're being monitored or screened by the NSA or the Department of Homeland Security?
Oh, cameras are everywhere.
Everyone's living with their heads over their shoulders. They're worried about what they write in emails. They're worried that what they say in public could be misconstrued by some crazy person in the intelligence apparatus. They're afraid of having a knock at the door in the middle of the night. So what are we living in now, a free society or a crypto dictatorship under Obama?
I think the point you raised in your book about the National Defense Authorization Act, and it was signed into law secretly New Year's Eve by the president, and the authorization to kill U.S. citizens abroad, and you know, a lot of Republican candidates, they don't want to talk about this. I guess Ron Paul's the only one who's really raised it. I'm very uncomfortable with the United States having that power. Very uncomfortable.
Laura, even the ACLU was shocked by the NDAA passed on New Year's Eve. His own Justice Department was shocked by it. Are we now living in an Argentina where the dictator said, listen, I have the right to have anyone whacked or picked up in the middle of the night by the military, but don't worry about it. He said this. I'm quoting him now. He said, don't worry, I won't use this power. Should you believe him? No. The NDAA is the most anti-freedom act ever signed into American law, and the complicit media let it go almost unnoticed, Laura. So when I say trickle-down tyranny, I'm not joking, it's not hype. It's real. people don't even understand how real it is.
We're talking to Michael Savage. His new book is just out, and Michael is one of the most prominent voices on the radio and in print in the United States of America, and still banned, right, from England. You still can't go to England at all.
Laura, I can't get into England, and damn, I was looking forward to the dental care that I'd receive under their health plan. I really was looking forward to the cuisine of England. And when I was banned, I said, there goes my summer trip to the land of the free and the home of the Magna Carta. Unbelievable. Laura, can I read one line to you? Because I think this line will live forever. It's the opening line to my book. And here it is. Economies can be rebuilt. Armies can be repopulated. But once a nation's pride is gone, it can almost never be restored. The loss of a nation's honor is something not even centuries can repair. I believe that that's the most important sentence I've ever written. Because if you look at the Republican field, you do not see any of them talking about the nation's honor, do you? You see technocrats telling us how they're going to tweak this or tweak that. They never refer to America as an entity. They, too, have bought into the Kool-Aid that we're just another nation amongst many.
We're talking to Michael Savage on the Laura Ingraham Show. And, Michael, this is what Felipe Calderon said through an interpreter yesterday, standing next to the President of the United States after he did that Chicago-style hit on the Supreme Court. Listen closely. This is through the interpreter, and he's describing what Mexico's medical system is like. Let's listen.
Oh, my God.
Of the 12 million Mexicans, 106 million will have efficient, effective, universal health care coverage. So I would say that that I would hope that one of the greatest economies in the world, such as the United States, could follow our example in achieving this.
Oh, my God.
Because it was a great thing.
So now we should follow Mexico's example. Should we have the same number of beheadings that Mexico has, too? Is that part of the way we should copy them?
The Mexico healthcare system is so good that I think Congress should go there for their medical care and experience it firsthand and then come back to we the people and tell us about the glories of Mexican medical care. You know, the empty clinics, the dirty smocks, the uneducated doctors. That really is the ticket for the future. I don't call it Obamacare. I call it Castro Care. This is the greatest scam in American history.
Michael Savage, his new book, Trickle Down Tyranny, just out, brand new. His first major interview, of course, here on the Laura Ingraham Show. Delighted to talk to Michael about all of this. And Michael, the fact of the matter is, anybody but Obama, right? That's what people are saying. Anybody but Obama, even if they think Romney is not particularly the most compelling candidate. People are like, we can't wait another 4 years. And it wasn't surprising yesterday that an audience member at this event in Wisconsin stands up and asks this question of Mitt Romney.
I guess a lot of people say that, you know, your wounded faith may not be a concern in the election. But I think it might be, as well as I found these verses from the Mormon book. Moses 7:8 says,
Why don't you give me a question?
I started going through the Book of Mormon and started asking questions. Michael, how ugly is this going to get?
The fact of the matter is, if you like Cuban-style government, if you like Mexican-style medical systems, you're going to just love the next 4 years. By the way, Laura, our good friend, the Drudge Report, just posted the article, Michael Savage, Do or Die for America, from WND on the top right above Janet Napolitano's forehead. where we see that she's granted stealth amnesty to illegals just in time for the election. It happened. It just happened. These people are breaking the law every day, Laura. It's frightening to see what they're getting away with. And if it wasn't for your show, my show, the Drudge Report, and unfortunately, what, six other outlets in the country, we would be living in Argentina already.
No, people wouldn't know anything because, as we heard from Obama yesterday, it's more important to find out how Sasha's basketball team is doing. That's the level of the questions we're getting from the press, and that's what the Obama is setting up perfectly. Obama administration is setting up. Let's go to Tony, Arlington, Mass. You're talking to Michael Savage. Tony.
I'm 85, a veteran of World War II, and I'd like to mention that seeing that the president is talking about these unelected officials making these decisions, What about the czars and the people of his cabinet and so forth?
Oh, if you're Romney, why don't you say something like that today? Yeah, exactly. That's a great point. And, Michael, we're hearing better points from the callers than we are from Romney's advisors.
Well, you know and I know Romney's advisors are there, his Brutuses. Romney's advisors are doing to him exactly what they did to McCain. They're undermining him. You would think Romney would have the brains to throw them out and get some vigorous support. But, Laura, can we just go back to another main point here that I make in Trickle Down Tyranny? Without pushing the book, I feel that everything is on the line, Laura. If anyone listening to this show disagrees with the following, then you know what? Don't listen to my show or buy my book. Do you believe that Obama does the following? Does he reward poverty? Does he punish success? Does he praise our enemies and stiff our allies like Israel? Has he used the military as a pawn like the Navy SEALs? Does he create chaos at the border, letting illegals run over the border? And finally, isn't it true that corporations and his cronies make off with all the wealth? If one of those statements is false, then I am false. If all of those statements are true, then I am true, Laura. This is not a joke. This is not about a book. This is about the last chance we have. As tepid as Romney is, you and I both know we would sleep better at night because on the issue of national security and the military, that alone is a reason to vote for Romney.
And just also a serious and dignified approach to serious issues. I mean, we won't worry about the reality show that the White House has become. That's not how they operate. Yeah, they've made a lot of money. Yeah, they have a car elevator in their house in La Jolla. Good for them. I wish I had a car elevator.
Who cares? I could use a car elevator. I need a car elevator. Absolutely.
No, you need a boat elevator, Michael, with all your boats. That's what you need. Car elevator? Forget that. I mean, it's ridiculous. You don't need a car.
Laura,
you need something
need
for those boats.
No, I need a car elevator on my boat is what I need.
No, you need a helicopter elevator on your boat.
Laura,
okay, I've been on your boat.
Let's not get carried away. Look, Laura, you know, it's one thing to talk about the poor and helping the poor and live their lifestyle and be a man of the people, but you and I both know the man lives like a king. How many vacations has the First Lady taken in 2012?
17. She was at Aspen. She was at Vegas. She was at Mount Rushmore. She was in San Francisco. She was at the Nickelodeon Kids' Choice Award. She did the Botswana trip with a big old safari. Tower of London. No joking about she should be in the Tower of London. No. Tower of London, did the Paris thing, did the Middle East, Strasbourg. I mean, what? It never ends. This is just...
No.
But, Michael, come on. Trickle. I love Michael's book, Trickle Down Tyranny. Michael, at least Michelle Obama is having fun, even if our country's going down the tubes. I mean, Michael, you have to look on the bright side here.
They've trashed the White House. It's a disgrace. I don't like waking up and seeing what they're doing to my country. How's that?
Michael Savage, his new book, link to it on our website, lauraingram.com. Read the WND article as well. Congratulations, Michael.
Savage.
I just remind conservative commentators that 4 years, what we've heard is the biggest problem on the bench was judicial activism or a lack of judicial restraint. That an unelected group of people would somehow overturn a duly constituted and passed.
All right. So this is the tyrant in the White House calling the Supreme Court justices an unelected group of people like they're a bunch of bums in a coffee shop. The man speaks with more respect for drug addicts than he does the Supreme Court. The president speaks with more respect for the Syrian militias than he does for the U.S. Supreme Court. I can go down. I can keep the litany going if you'd like. It's one of the most outrageous things I've ever heard in my life. But a federal appeals court today fired back at Obama. Finally, someone has the guts. Where's Romney? This was a perfect opportunity for the Etch-a-Sketch to say something. And they should get his wife off the stage. And Romney is a disaster, which is why even liberals are saying, we want to see more of Ann Romney. You think that they're saying it because they like Romney? She's ruining the man's campaign. He looks like he's henpecked, number one. She has no business being so prominent at this point. Who is misadvising him? The same Brutuses who destroyed McCain's campaign during the 08 election. The same group of Brutuses. Ann Romney has no place on the campaign trail at this time. She should be in the background, not the foreground. He shouldn't be seen as a weakling standing there holding his wife's pocketbook with an S.E. grin. I'm sorry. I'm sick of it. She goes on a little radio show, a leftist radio show in New York City, and says, unzip him and you'll see the real man. This is getting crazier by the day. We're watching the meltdown of any chance we have to change the situation. But the escalating battle between Obama the tyrant and the judiciary occurred today. In fact, the federal appeals court got so mad that they ordered the Justice Department to answer by this Thursday whether the Obama administration believes that the courts have the right to strike down a federal law, according to a lawyer who was in the courtroom. It was astounding, because if you want to understand this, since 1803, the Supreme Court has asserted the power to strike down laws it interprets as unconstitutional. That's since 1803. And Obama now wants to transform that. Mr. Transformational wants to end that as well. So this three-judge federal panel today asked the administration to admit that basic premise, despite the president's remarks, which implied the contrary. And so this three-judge panel today ordered the Justice Department to submit a three-page, single-spaced letter by noon Thursday addressing whether the executive branch believes courts have such power. You know that he won't do that. You know he won't do that. But the judge, the appeals court judge, Jerry Smith, was so shocked by this that he asked the Department of Justice in a case today, do you agree that the judiciary could strike down an unconstitutional law? And the DOJ lawyer answered yes and mentioned Marbury versus Madison, a landmark case that firmly established the principle of judicial review more than 200 years ago. Every constitutional lawyer, Law School 101 refers to Marbury versus Madison. And so, therefore, it comes right back to Obama. Did he really go to law school? How did he really get into law school? Did he really take tests in law school? Did he pass a bar after he got out of law school? What courses in constitutional law did this man pass teach that he doesn't even know Marbury versus Madison, which every entering law student is taught? How is this possible? Does the president actually believe such a right exists? How is it possible that he's getting away with it? The answer is because we have Izvestia and we have Pravda. Now, we have the audio from the Fifth Circuit hearing with Judge Smith's order to the DOJ. You can get that, Baywell, for me tomorrow. But the fact of the matter is we're living in very, very dangerous times. No, I'm not going to mention the book again. I don't have to. You know the title. I don't have to plug the book again. 1-800-449-8255, fire away on the Savage Nation. New York City, WOR. Randy, go ahead, please. Fire away.
Yes, I got my poor wife crying here. She called the clerk in Bridgewater at Barnes & Noble. She says it's up, down, around, nowhere to find it. It's on an octagon. And she's so upset and trickled down tyranny.
Well, look, Barnes & Noble bought a lot of books. Most Barnes & Noble stores are displaying trickle-down tyranny prominently. This clerk should be chastised tomorrow morning, and they will be. But to tell your wife not to cry, is she there now? Because I'm sending her a free copy of the book. Is she there?
Yes, here she is.
No, I don't have to talk to her. I'm just saying, stop crying already. It's not the biggest thing in the world that you find a leftist clerk who hides my books. It'll be much worse when they don't even publish my books, or you see a bonfire, not of the vanities, but of the tyrants, when they burn books that they deem to be offensive to the president. That's when you know you're in trouble and you have to move to Canada. When they start having bonfires around the country of books they don't approve of.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
All You have to listen to some of this audio, including MSNBC hack Mitchell kissing Hillary Clinton's feet and asking her if she's going to run for president.
There is a lot of unfinished business. You deserve a rest after this term is over. Everyone knows that, and a lot of thanks. But there will come a time, and there is a growing expectation that you will run for president.
Well, Andrea, that is
why
also
not?
It's very flattering, but you know, I'm not at all planning to do that. I have no desire or intention. I want to do the best job I can as the Secretary of State for this president. I want to take some time to get reconnected to the stuff that makes life worth living, family, friends, the sort of activities that I enjoy.
And here's Van Johnson saying he's confident Obama will not lose the black vote even if he announced he was gay.
Do you think President Obama would lose some of the black vote if, in fact, he did come out in support of gay marriage?
I think if President Obama came out as gay, he wouldn't lose the black vote. President Obama's not going to lose the black vote no matter what he does.
Finally, you have to hear this because it's been buried by the tornado of the media. Here's President Obama threatening the Supreme Court.
Ultimately, I'm confident that the Supreme Court will not take what would be an unprecedented, extraordinary step of overturning a law that was passed by a strong majority of a democratically elected Congress. I just remind conservative commentators that for years what we've heard is the biggest problem on the bench was judicial activism or a lack of judicial restraint. That an unelected group of people would somehow overturn a duly constituted and passed law. Well, here's a good example.
You have to hear the soundbite of the head of the Associated Press, which is nothing but a propaganda arm for Obama, slavishly praising the president. It's never been heard before, except in the ex-Soviet Union. I have to read some of this to you. Introducing the president, the head of the Associated Press, which is supposed to keep politicians at bay, said this: President Obama made history as the first minority to be elected president. Even many who opposed his election felt proud of our country as he took the oath of office. As president, he inherited the headwinds of the worst economic recession since the Great Depression. He pushed through Congress the biggest economic recovery plan in history. He pursued domestic and foreign policy agendas. And it was highlighted by his signature law of the health care legislation known to Fidel Castro. I can go on, but ladies and gentlemen, never before in American history has a press been owned by a government as it is now. You have to listen to it to believe it, because it's not believable unless you listen to it.
President Obama made history as the first minority to be elected president. Even many who opposed his election felt proud of our country as he took the oath of office. As president, he inherited the headwinds of the worst economic recession since the Great Depression. He pushed through Congress the biggest economic recovery plan in history and led a government reorganization of two of the big three auto manufacturers to save them from oblivion. He pursued domestic and foreign policy agendas that were controversial to many, highlighted by his signature into law of the most comprehensive health care legislation in history. And the budget plans proposed by the president on the one hand and Republicans on the other hand aren't even on the same planet. Many Democrats believe that his agenda doesn't go far enough, and most Republicans believe that it goes way too far.
Questions for today's show are very interesting. What did you see when you went to the bookstore today to buy my book, Trickle Down Tyranny? Were there flash mobs? Was the book buried? Well, how was the book displayed? Was it up front as the publisher paid for? Or was it hidden in the back next to how to remove a female mustache? Well, how were you treated by the clerk who helped you with the book? Was the clerk helpful? Or were they surly with green hair and a tongue piercing and an Obama bumper sticker on their forehead? Well, did you meet someone buying the book? Did you make a new friend? Are you buying Trickle Down Tyranny for yourself or as a gift for someone else? If it's a gift, which liberal friend is it for? Did you buy a salami for your boy in the army? Meaning, did you buy a copy of Trickle Down Tyranny for your boy who's in the Pyrenees? Were you able to buy the book today, or was it sold out? And how many copies did you get? This today is a very big day for me because it's the launch of my final nonfiction book. It's my magnum opus. I'd like to say it's my magnum open, but it's not yet time for the show to be over. It's my magnum opus. So on michaelsavage.com, what do we have? Well, there's a picture of my dog, Dr. Savage's celebration. You can see some pictures from my party. The lead picture is that of Teddy. If you love dogs, go there, michaelsavage.com. Underneath it is the most important article of the week. It's from WorldNet Daily, written by my friend Art Moore. Michael Savage says it's do or die for America. And I think, frankly, that article is worth reading to you on the Savage Nation now because, yeah, you're going to see the book ad. You're going to see all of that. Okay, looking down inside the Beltway, Savage unleashes more fury from the Wash Times. Trickle-down tyranny is the blueprint for defeating Obama. Newsmax's article says, I wish Romney would show some spine. Here's one for the boys at ABC, CBS, and NBC who covered up Zimmerman's injuries. You know how they made him into a white racist, then he turned out to be Hispanic? Then they said he had no injuries? Well, a new video of Mr. Zimmerman appears to show injuries on the back of his head, lending credence to his claim that he was in a struggle for his life. Department of Homeland and Security has now gone full force into the breaking law phase, granting amnesty to illegal aliens under the guise of unlawful presence waivers. What? Unlawful presence waivers? That would be like unlicensed driver's licenses. How's that? Would you believe you'd have a government that is this criminal? What else is on michaelsavage.com? Well, let's go to the bottom. If you want to go to the bottom, you can hear me talk about the most important book I've ever written with a soundbite. Feds are moving to deport president's drunken uncle. Egyptians want Iran to replace the U.S. as a strategic partner. I warned you this was coming, a trickle-down tyranny, but you didn't believe me. In Israel, Jews face daily assaults at a sacred site, beaten up to the sounds of Allahu Akbar from the people who practice the religion of peace over there in the West Bank. Oh, yes, one other story on Michael Savage. The head of the General Services Administration was permitted to resign after it turned out she was caught spending over $800,000 on a conference in Las Vegas. The conference featured a clown, a mind reader. And shall I go on? She should be in jail, and her pension should be seized. But then again, it's the Chicago way. 1-800-449-8255. What else is on the website today? Tornadoes, tractor trailers flying in Dallas. Go to the Drudge Report, Michael Savage, Do or Die for America from WorldNet Daily. It's on my site as well. You can read it on Drudge or on Michael Savage. It's a do-or-die situation, Savage told WND. You can see the trajectory of Obama's regime thus far. Imagine your worst fears, and you're going to have some or all of it if this man is reelected. Savage's trickle-down tyranny crushing Obama's dream of the socialist states of America is released today by HarperCollins. Savage explains why he wrote the book in its opening pages. The American people have been kept in the dark about what I'm going to reveal to you in this book. They've been fed an endless stream of lies. Savage begins with advice to the next president, asserting that the nation needs someone, quote, the exact opposite of Barack Obama. He notes that women have moved in Obama's direction, giving him the lead over Romney. Savage said women are flocking toward Obama because they look at the Republican field and see a nightmare. Romney says nothing. Santorum is nauseating. Gingrich is physically repulsive. So women are saying, you know, I'll stick with him. It's all style anyway. Savage said it's still unclear who Romney is. Romney has no traction with the American people because there is no there. Where is he? Who is he? The Etch-a-Sketch wasn't a bad metaphor. Who is the man? Savage fears a repeat of Senator John McCain's failed 08 presidential campaign. But he said if Romney wins the nom, he would vote for him strictly on the issue of national security and taxation. But as far as the essence of what I really believe in, the pride of a nation, he's not there, said Savage. Savage thinks Romney is a good man, but simply doesn't understand America. I think he's part of the establishment, and the establishment has contempt for the average person. Savage said if he were running for office, he would have a clear and understandable platform that sums up his program, and it would be borders, language, and culture. Can anyone say they know what the Republicans stand for? Where is America in any of their sloganeering? Supported by nearly 300 pages of footnoted documentation of Obama's radical ideas and actions, Savage makes a bold declaration in Trickle-Down Tyranny. If Obama is elected for another four-year term, he'll be president for life. He'll be the new Hugo Chavez. We have less than 6 months to make sure this doesn't happen. There's much more in the article about Obama bypassing the founders. All the evidence is in trickle-down tyranny. The one book you may need to educate your friends and neighbors. I'll be right back right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
While we thought the 2008 White House race was rough and tumble, the 2012 race makes it look like bumper cars by comparison. Our country has become even more polarized. The 1% and the 99% are at each other's throats. Campaigns are now funded by secretive multimillion dollar super PACs. What's next? Gigapacks? The only thing anybody seems willing to compromise on is, well, I can't think of anything. Really, who would want this job in the first place? We're very honored today to have the man currently holding the office and aspiring for it for another term. And, with apologies to Al Green, my new favorite singer. Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States of America. Let's go.
So I gave you like 11 questions, and I'm getting basically the people who receive radio on their filling calling. No, I'm not. I'm starting to wonder who listens to talk radio anymore. I don't even know. The business is so hard to predict. You don't know anymore. I mean, I'm starting to wonder about this. I have no idea who is listening. Like, what are your favorite news websites other than Michael Savage? Which types sites have you stopped going to and why? Do you still read a physical newspaper? When you buy a book, you're going to buy a hardcover or an ebook version of Trickle Down Tyranny next week for, please, The Land of the Liberal.
What an honor. Well, you know, we're not all liberals out here, though. We have to fight the fight just like you every day. And simple, hardcover book.
Mike, I love your call, but I can't hear you. You're echoing. So please, let's go to a non-speaker phone. Thank you for the call. That was really not from Ann Arbor. It was from Pelican Bay. I think they give him one call a day in the rec room. Mike, I got to tell you something. We bought one of those telephone booths after they went out of business. You know, we got it at an auction gallery. And we had a grandmother who really liked her phone. You know, we heard of the iPhone, where she said she had a phone, and she said, it's my phone, because I'm always on it, and that's why I say it's an iPhone, because it's my phone. Anyway, the point is, we bought that phone booth, and Mike, we buried her in that phone booth. She loved her phone so much, that old dial phone, we just buried her in that booth. I'm starting to think that's who listens to the show. I have no idea anymore. How can anybody in the world tell me they're interested in the utterances of Mitt Romney, Barack Obama, Newt Gingrich, Rick Santorum, and Neuron? Neuron's gone altogether. I think he went to the moon. Where is Neuron? He's completely off the canvas since I called him Neuron. Now I'm going to get slammed by the Ron Paul, but don't take it the wrong way, please. You want to talk more about the race baiters, the haters, the race haters, the race baiters? Do you want me to talk about that? Well, I mean, what do you want me to talk about? Food again? A meatball? I can't do it. No meatball. I had a pizza last night. It's so bad for me. But why does it taste so good? I had a doctor friend he was one of the most advanced people in the world in nutrition and health, way before everybody. A real medical doctor, Stanford MD. And he went into nutrition in 1970. He knew more than most of the quacks today who know nothing. And Bob Cathcart, great man, great friend of mine. I loved him. Sorry he's dead. Really miss him. He said to me that we are addicted to that which we are allergic to, which is true, actually, when you think about it. You look at everything that you're addicted to, whether it's food or drugs, you could say you're allergic to the very thing you're addicted to. Even in people, you want to really push that metaphor. The things we are addicted to are that which we are allergic to. So what are you going to do, you know? It's like a sign I saw in my father's store when I was 5 years old. Remember the little signs that I used to have in those days? Everything alike is illegal, immoral, or fattening. Well, it's true. Nothing's changed. Because in my life, the same is true that it was then, because it's a universal truth. Isn't it true in your life everything you like is illegal, immoral, or fattening? Except the Savage Nation, which is very interesting because this sort of sounds like it's a Samizdat news show in the ex-Soviet Union, which you're not allowed to listen to. It still has that quality, doesn't it? I still sound like I'm an underground guy, underground radio, or if I... Do you still like this show? Does anyone like this show? Yes or no? Well, why don't you tell me you love the show? Buddy needs to hear it every once in a while. Okay, Pittsburgh. Charlene, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, I do love your show. And to answer your question regarding whether or not I still read the newspaper, no, I listen to you. You go over all the important topics.
Well, that's interesting.
So why do I need the
newspaper? Now, this is important to remember, to give credit where credit is due. I don't do investigative reporting. I don't do any reporting. I aggregate stories, and I pick the ones that are of interest to me, you know?
Interesting to me also, the important ones.
All right. Well, I do think that some of the ones I pick are important. I mean, talking about Subway sandwiches cutting out the $5 sandwich because the minimum wage is too high here, I wouldn't rank that as one of the most important news stories of the day, would you?
No, but you interlace your stories with humor, and I need that too.
Well, that's a different story. I'm going to interlace your day with a copy of Trickle Down Tyranny. I don't even have the strength to ask you to give the title out. I'm so exhausted.
Savage.
South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley is a rising star in Republican politics, and she's been talked about as a possible vice presidential nominee. She joins us right now in the Savage Nation to discuss 2012 politics and her endorsement of Mitt Romney. Governor Haley, welcome to the Savage Nation. So, Governor, when will Governor Romney be the official nominee of the Republican Party?
Well, that seems to be the question of the day. I think it's when the people are ready to make him the official nominee, but I do feel like it's getting closer.
If Mitt Romney approaches you about being the VP, would you accept?
I would have to say no. And the reason is, and you'll see all of the challenges that we went through in the book during that campaign, but I made a promise to the people of the state of South Carolina, and I think it's very important that I live up to that promise and finish the job that I was given.
What needs to be done, in your opinion, to defeat Barack Obama in November? Have you read my book, Trickle Down Tyranny?
I think that the Republicans will defeat President Obama when they force him to have to answer on his record. When you look at the fact that we have seen more debt in his 3 years than we saw in Bush's eight, when you look at the state of the economy, when you look at the unemployment numbers after the stimulus, they're higher than he said they would be. I mean, you look at the debt and everything else that goes with it. I don't think you're going to find anybody that thinks their life is better than it was 3 years ago.
What brought you into politics?
It was really one of frustration. I was in the corporate accounting world, and I saw in that side of things that we had plants in every state and how government regulations would really get in the way of our companies making money. And then when I went back home to the family business, what I saw was just how hard it was to make a dollar and how easy it was for government to take it. And that really led me to the fact that my parents always said, don't complain about it, do something about it. And so I decided to run for office.
How did your early life as a child of Indian immigrants affect the path you've decided to take?
Well, you know, so much of who I am today, I talk about it in the book, and I also say that it's because they came to this country, they left a great life in India and came to this country because they wanted us to have opportunities. And they always told us how blessed we were to live in this country, that only in this country could you do whatever you wanted and be as successful as you wanted, and nothing was going to get in your way. And I started doing the books for them when I was 13. It was at that point that I learned the value of a dollar. It wasn't until I got to college that I realized that wasn't normal. But, you know, what I realize now is that they didn't want me to know limitations. They didn't want me to know the limitations of age. They didn't want me to know the limitations of gender. And they didn't want me to know the limitations of being Indian. They just said, whatever you do, be great at it and make sure that people remember you for it.
What is your take on the cultural wars that are going on in this country today?
You know, I think look at the fact that here was a Indian girl that was raised in a small southern town of 2,500 people, and all of the challenges that I go through and all of the challenges that I talk about in the book, but just on a racial barrier, on cultural barriers, all of those things, And this is the same state that just elected a 38-year-old Indian American female for governor. It says so much about our state, and it says so much about our country. And I think the Trayvon Martin case is tragic, without question, but we shouldn't forget that we have come such a long way. That doesn't mean there's not more improvements we can make, but there's so much improvement we've made in this country.
Can you give the Savage Nation an example of something that happened in your childhood that had a profound impact on your life?
Oh, you know, I talk about the fact that I was in a beauty pageant, and there was the We Miss Bamberg pageant, and all the kids from the town would participate, and my sister and I were in the pageant, and there was a white queen and there was a black queen, and they came over to my parents and they ended up having to disqualify us because they said that they didn't know which category to put us in. And I remember my mom saying, well, you know, will you at least let her do her talent? And so I sang, this land is your land, this land is my land. And, you know, that was just one case of something that wouldn't happen today. You know, that same town is the one that, you know, accepted me into Girl Scouts. That same town is the one that helped my parents get jobs. That same town is the one that supported my brother when he was fought in Desert Storm. I mean, that's the progress we made. They didn't understand our Indian family, and we didn't necessarily understand how to deal with being in that small southern town, but we grew together. And I think it's a great story to show the differences that we've made, not only in South Carolina, but across the country.
What's the biggest lesson you've learned since entering politics?
I think the biggest lesson is, you know, don't listen to the media. Don't pay attention to that. They're there for sensationalism. You know, stay close to the facts and stay close to what's real and stay close to your family. And that's the thing, is that you watch these people who struggle and make it and get elected, and then you see other people try and bring you down. And, you know, you can't focus on that. You have to focus on results. And that's why I continue to say can is not an option. It's not about what you can't do. It's about how you get past it and push through it.
Where can we read more?
Oh, well, the book describes my challenge growing up as a member of the only Indian family in a small southern town, and it talks about the challenges from a racial aspect as well as the cultural aspect, but it also goes into that those challenges never stop. I faced it, whether it was with my first job working in an all-male company. I faced it when I ran for the State House. I faced it when I ran for governor. But what it tells you is, you know, the challenges only made me stronger, and that we need to see real people run for office, and we need to see more women run for office. And these challenges turn out to be great blessings in the end. And the book is Can't Is Not an Option, My American Story, and you can get it in any bookstore anywhere. You can also go to NikkiHaley.com and get a signed version.
Governor Haley, thanks for joining us today on the Savage Nation.
President Obama made history as the first minority to be elected president. Even many who opposed his election felt proud of our country as he took the oath of office. As president, he inherited the headwinds of the worst economic recession since the Great Depression. He pushed through Congress the biggest economic recovery plan in history and led a government reorganization of two of the big three auto manufacturers to save them from oblivion. He pursued domestic and foreign policy agendas that were controversial to many, highlighted by his signature into law of the most comprehensive health care legislation in history. And the budget plans proposed by the president on the one hand and Republicans on the other hand aren't even on the same planet. Many Democrats believe that his agenda doesn't go far enough, and most Republicans believe that it goes way too far.
You know how much that irritates me? Well, just think how your throat would feel this spring without Pine Brothers' softish throat drops. Remember Pine Brothers? Those soft, delicious throat drops we all grew up with, the ones your parents bought to soothe you when you had a sore throat that you couldn't stop eating after your throat got better? Well, they're back in natural honey and wild cherry flavors, and they're just as wonderful and effective as you can remember. Visit them on the web at pinebrothers.com. That's pinebrothers.com.
Savage. Here I Am a Walrus. Because I was reading John Bolton's prognostications and I thought of this song. Well, play I Am a Walrus already. Terrible. I was never a Beatles fan. Here we go, the Eggman. People swooned over every word. I must have missed something in the 60s because I was never a Beatles fan. Well, I don't understand it. Maybe I missed something, but I don't quite get it. What's the big deal about the lyrics? Why do people have to be so obscure in what they're trying to say? I'm the Eggman. I'm the Walrus. Ooh-coo-coo-poo, ooh-coo-pa-choo. Why don't you just write a book, Trickle Down Tyranny? What do you have to be obscure? It's like going to an art museum and they smear Dreck on the wall and that's supposed to be as good as Michelangelo. You know what I'm saying? Forget about it. Anyway, whatever. It's a different thing. I guess I missed a lot of things in my life. Some I didn't miss, some I did miss. I am the Eggman. I am the Eggman. I am the Walrus. When you hear Walrus, I think of... he should shave the mustache. Look, if he wants to be the Secretary of State under Romney, Bolton, he should shave off that mustache already. Certain things have a shelf life. What would he look like without that seal, that Walrus thing? He's a smart man. Don't get me wrong, right? Come on, man. He's a very smart guy. But every day he's in the news because he is on the Romney team, Bolton. And every day he's trying to show, he's trying to stay relevant. I understand that's how it works. It's like the shadow government. They're supposed to do that. But the mustache isn't working for me lately. I never liked mustaches. I myself have a goatee. I have a beard. You should know if you see a picture of me. I took it off a few times in my life, and the family said, put it back on. You look better with it. I look 10 years younger without a beard. I got in there. It's salt and pepper. A little more pepper than salt than I would like, but nevertheless, what do I care? I don't use Just for Men. I will admit to you, though, I tried it once. Used, like, aniline dyes and things of that nature. You think that your body doesn't know it. I mean, the skin is is your largest organ, right? You're putting this toxic dye on your face. And you don't understand why people are getting deathly illnesses. Dying hair. Dying beards. Leave it alone. You don't like it, shave it off. Stop dyeing it already. Go bald. What do you have to dye for? You want to dye for the dye? Go ahead, enjoy yourself. But don't use a tie-dye. Because then you'll have to go to work for Obamacare. Or something along those lines. No, I have a beard. I don't know. Beards don't bother me. Well, okay, let me modify it. Since the advent of Islamists, I don't like beards. It's terrible. I don't like any. Santa Claus I don't like now. I'm afraid of, like, anyone who plays Santa Claus. Orthodox rabbis, I'm freaked out. I don't know. No, the beard thing is you've got to be trimmed a little. If you trim the beard, it shows that you like it because you're a man, but you're not wearing it as a statement. You know what I'm saying? Do I make sense? And it also shows that you're taking care of yourself. You know, a beard is also for a lazy person. There's nothing more disgusting as a man who has a beard than an unkempt beard. It's disgusting. I could get into this if it was a live performance, and you know where my mind would go with this right away, but I'm not going to do it. I mean, but the fact of the matter is every meal you eat has to be on your face. And I look very carefully at my own beard now in the morning. Is it trimmed over the lip, like a little trim? I got like a magnifying glass. I'm getting more meticulous about it. And why am I sharing this with you? It's because I was playing the thing I Am a Walrus, and I was talking about Bolton and beards and mustaches. So the point I'm making is... Even in the heyday of the hippie 60s, I never liked mustaches. I distrusted them somehow. Am I making sense to you? Guys with beards, if they were trimmed, I trusted. There was something about mustaches. I didn't know what it was. Like Geraldo Rivera. Do you trust him? I mean, that mustache should have been gone 40 years ago. Right? I mean, Jerry Rivers. You trust that mustache on him? How long does he have to wear that look of his? How long does he go on with that thing already? A Hispanic journalist. Unbelievable to me what they get away with. Now, I could do serious stuff. I don't know if I'm in the mood. Like, what do you read? What you don't read? Hey, what do you read? You know. So, what's in the news? What's in the news? I'm not doing the race story. Leave that to Al Sharptongue. Canada ups retirement age and bid to balance budget. Thanks, Matt. Well, we knew that was coming. It should have been done here. They should up the retirement age in America. What are you retiring for? Where are you going? To gamble in Las Vegas to make Sheldon Adelson richer? Well, just Raise the retirement age to like 70. Most people, look, 65 today, it's too early to retire. You see retired people, they don't know what to do with themselves. They hit golf balls in their garage now for the last 30 years of their life. They don't know what to do with themselves. The reason that retirement age was set then is because most people died like at 66. But with the advent of better diets and modern medicine and dental floss, people are living much. No, I wish I had started dental flossing when I was younger. I mean, I didn't know about it. We didn't know in those days that the tooth was related to heart disease. Who knew? Another myth. If you don't floss, you get a heart attack. What nonsense they come up with. I never saw anything like it. The things they'll do to sell something. A good many of the deaths, by the way, from your father's age were caused by the medical profession, incidentally. Oh, yeah, I don't want to go into a medical thing because then I'm going to get the quacks calling. You know, Mike, what do I do for impotence? I've tried the pills that you advertise. My hair doesn't grow. You know, can I rub some watermelon rind on my head? Just go bald and impotent like everyone else. Okay, stop fighting it. What are you worried about? You don't enjoy sex anyway. What do you care about? That's crazy, this obsession with sex. No, what animal on earth wants to, like, have a sexual desire at age 80? It's unheard of in the animal kingdom. Do you see an old dog getting, like, going in heat? It runs out at a certain point. Am I wrong in that? I remember when I was in the first year of psychology at Queens College, I learned that man is the only animal that is in heat, that thinks he's in heat 24-7, 365 days a year. Every man, oh, yeah, I saw her, I do that. Blah, blah, blah. It's all nonsense. It's all machismo garbage. Men are animals. So as an animal, basically you go into heat at certain periods of the year where you want to be with a woman. What's this? Oh, yeah, I'm ready to go. Oh, I'm in a bar. I'm ready to go. Look at her. What I would do to her. Blah, blah, blah. But at a certain point, you're supposed to give it up, too. The most dignified man I ever met in my life, long dead, Undertaker, New York, Ludlow Street, funeral parlor, next door, Dad's antique store. I'll give you his name. I don't know his last name. Barney. Drove the big caddies. They had like 1-inch clearance on each side because the elevators were built for like the 1920s. Now, here we were in the 50s, and the Cadillac hearses and limos were already wider, and they would, you know, back it into the Godfather elevator. So I hung out with this guy when I get bored in the antique store, took my break. I'd go down into the morgue, into where they did the autopsy, well, not the autopsy, the embalming, or I go right up into the elevator, into the garage. It was a great, great place. But Barney was this neat guy, very dapper, very clean, nicely dressed. And while the other older men would always make, oh, look at her, Mike, what I like. You know, as a little kid, they would tell me, look at her. I didn't know what they were talking about. I was like pre-adolescent, they were already talking to someone, not my father. My father was very dignified. Some of the old guys were like geezer types. Barney said to me as I got older, like I was 15, 16, he said to me, you know, Michael, he said, I've had my share. I never heard a man ever say that to me, ever since then. What man do you know that ever says about women, I've had my share, or about anything for that matter? What, do we live in an age of utter avariciousness? Who has their share today of anything? Whoever says they're satisfied with their lot. Which leads me to another thing, biblical, without getting preachy, because then you'll get bored. Another man I met who was a poor man, not, you know, didn't make money. And he said to me, he was talking about someone he knew who was very wealthy and kind of really miserable. The wealthy guy was miserable, agitated. The poor guy said to me, who is rich? He who is happy with his lot. Now, that's a loaded statement because you're poor doesn't mean you're happy with your lot, nor does it mean that a rich man is not happy with his lot. But who is rich? Who is a rich man? He who is happy with his lot. You know what I'm saying? I myself am not a happy man. I have never been content. I never will be content. I'm a driven person. I'm much like What Makes Sammy Run. I was driven from the time I was slapped on the back by the doctor to the day I go to the Albany, New York. Amanda, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael, I'm a newspaper reporter, and I think you're one of the most unbiased, clear-thinking people in the media. Your show is incredible, all of the subjects that you cover. And you do it with dignity, and you show both sides. It's incredible.
How did you get into journalism school with such a fair and unbiased mind?
Well, I didn't go to school to be a journalist. I have actually a double major in geology.
So you have a scientist's mind, and you wound up in the news business. Well, you are the hope for the future of the business. The people who go to J school are basically marionettes. You know that.
Well, they are, and their parents were journalists, maybe, or their family has money so they can afford it. I mean, my salary stinks. I work my butt off for this job.
How much do you make a year, Amanda?
I make $22,000 a year.
That's amazing. You ought to come to work for me, Amanda. I think I'll give you a job if you live on the West Coast.
Are you serious?
I don't know. I might. I hear that other people in the business have 8 staff members. I have none. In the interim, I'm sending you a copy of Trickle Down Tyranny. Gentlemen, get Amanda's email. Let she and I talk. Maybe I should hire a young journalist as my local producer. That might be fun. Maybe I'll have a rejuvenation, have somebody like that on my side. I mean, I'm too much of a loner. It's just me and Teddy. It's a limit to talking to a dog.
Savage.